Saturday, April 17th, was marred only by the news that the McNamaras couldn't stay the whole weekend, must leave right after noon. Early in the morning, the four of us rode around our ranch and on into the Martin Ranch, stopping to see Leela a moment, and then picking up Dale on over into the Dance Ranch, he of whom Lyndon has told that tale these many years about those children got to wear those awful names all their lives. And then they never got to heifer calf. Mr. Dance had named his children Jay and Allah, after a neighbor, Jay Chapman, under the impression that they were going to receive a present of a heifer calf. The Dance Ranch, almost adjoining us, we had never seen, or at least Lyndon hadn't since his childhood days, when he said he had ridden every step of it with his Uncle Clarence. It was one of the prettiest we have seen anywhere, almost park-like. Well cleared, large live oaks, thick grass, and a beautiful quilt, a pattern of pink, yellow, blue, white flowers, more flocks than I've seen nearly anywhere. No doubt about it, it was good land, as land goes in these parts, and it was close at hand. Lyndon wants it, and Dale wants it. We had to get back at the ranch in time for Lyndon to make a statement on tape for the press. About 40 of them were gathered in the front yard at 11:45. I had ordered cookies and coffee put out on the front porch, but here I got a D- as a hostess because telephone calls from Linda or Lucy kept me inside, and there sat the cookies and coffee, and out in the yard was the press with no one. And then right on time, Lyndon emerged, made his statement. They dived for their cars, and we have cookies for a week. I gather the statement was planned as a sort of a counter move, a chess play, for Senator Fulbright's statement in a speech about Vietnam, approximately this, that we ought to cease bombing for a few days to give a chance for negotiations to start. He has the peculiar position of being our supposed leader in the Senate on foreign affairs and is diametrically opposed to Lyndon's policy in Vietnam, an embarrassing situation. The statement spoke of the conflict whose beginning was obscure and whose end is not in sight. We have asked for talk on peace. There is no answer. No answer from Hanoi. No answer from Peking. You cannot talk to people who do not want to talk. We will not get out. We will not stop bombing unless there is an indication that they are willing to talk. He reiterated our readiness for negotiation, but emphasized that it takes two to negotiate, and both willing. And then he said that due to the pressure of congressional business, we would postpone impending visits from Ayub Khan of Pakistan, from Shastri of India, and any others until the early fall. How hard it is to say just what you mean. Foreign aid is up in the Congress. It is going to be hard enough to pass it anyway, maybe impossible. And the repeated presence of foreign chiefs of state and their possible public expressions here would not be helpful to this sensitive business of guiding it through the Congress. When it was over, I hugged the McNamaras goodbye, had a quick lunch, and flew into Austin to get a hairdo. And then, with about 30 minutes to spare, because we were waiting for a passenger who was an expert on coastal Bermuda grass, I drove out to Laguna Gloria, the picturesque Italian villa on the banks of Lake Austin that used to belong to Clara Driscoll Sevier, wealthy, eccentric, legendary character of some 5 decades ago. Now it is an art museum, the headquarters of the Texas Fine Arts Association. And today, they had an exhibit sponsored by Wellesley, the works of school children. I noticed them all the way from the 2nd grade to the 11th grade. Watercolor, oils, pen and ink, collages. Delightfully humorous, gay, weird, bright. Landscapes, mood pictures, portraits. I would have loved to have bought. Some of them were so funny. Then I hurried back to the airport in time to get with Mary Ann Means and Mr. Brush, the grass man, and fly back to the ranch to drop off Mr. Brush, returning to Johnson City to meet with Neva and Betty Ann and Mr. Carter at the Johnson City house, walk over the grounds, and let Neva and Mr. Carter know how very grateful I am for the high-class job he's doing. My particular mission was to put out the small magnolias raised from seeds from the handsome magnolias at the elms. sentimentally cherished by me as a reminder of the three best years. We selected a spot to plant one at the Johnson City House, and then one at the Birthplace House. And then, stymied at the ranch, we finally chose a very second-rate spot in the backyard. Then the three of us picked up Marie and Marvin and helicoptered to the beach house, boat riding back for a fish dinner at the Haywood on the terrace. Lyndon and Wesley, Marianne and the Morsons had an evening of boating and looking and talking banking and politics and ranching and laughing at old-time stories. On these evenings, Lyndon is a raconteur par excellence. Many of his phrases, I wish I had a tape recorder handy. They are so earthy and colorful and true and fresh, though often rough. He's having one of the best times he's ever had in his life. I am grateful for it. I want to prolong it. I look at him in profile. He is so much too heavy. I do not know whether to lash out in anger or sarcasm or gently remind him for the 999th time. But now that I see him yearning toward days of peace and retirement, toward a life much along the pattern of this last 3 days, I strain even more at what I know is an obstacle to such a life, these 25 pounds or so of overweight. James and Mary and Gertrude have been wonderful on this trip. The meal's so good. The fish dinner tonight, to my taste, couldn't be equaled in Maxime's. After dinner, Marvin, Mary Ellen, Neva, and I played bridge, while Lyndon went peacefully to sleep on the couch. A great asset, a great wealth. He can go to sleep for a 10 minutes cat nap or an hour's, anywhere that he can stretch out, or sometimes even sitting straight up in the car.